Hi, buddy. Welcome to a Thursday edition of the Yale Bulldog Hour. Kevin Russ alongside here as always until 3. CG will take over. He's got the full 3 for you today to 6 o'clock because the Giants were nice enough to, well, they were nice enough to play in the morning our time. They had no choice. That was getaway day in New York, and the Giants got away all right. They got away with another loss. And like, I'm not going to keep pounding on this. I probably am. But now that the Bulldog baseball season is done, unfortunately, it would have been great to be talking about a regional that will start Saturday in Starkville, but that will not be the case unless you're a Cardinal fan, a Stanford Cardinal fan, you're excited, or the other Bulldogs, Mississippi State. But with the NBA Finals maybe all too quickly ready to end, since the Fife and Drum Corps again last night couldn't get it done, and hockey will wrap up in the next few days, it could be done as quickly as the weekend. If not, then you know, we got Game 5 tonight, Game 6 over the weekend. The point I'm trying to make is this. If you don't have big interest in the College World Series, the only thing we're going to have left with here very shortly station-wise going to be the Giants and the A's. Now, the A's lost a tough one last night. They also had a bad weekend against the Astros, and I've said this, they're not going to catch the Astros anyway, but the A's may slide back into the play-in game, the wild card game. They're a good club, but nobody seems to pay attention to them. The Giants still have a lot of people paying attention to them, and for us, unfortunately, the attention is not for great reasons because this team just cannot get it done, and I don't know what they're going to do with the trading deadline roaring up in front of us very quickly, because the reality is, and we had talked about it last week, they had a road trip that was set up on a platter. You could not have asked for a better road trip to win, going to woebegone Miami to play the Marlins. Actually, woebegone Marlins in Miami. There's nothing wrong with Miami, the city. Then to an even worse pitching staff in Baltimore. Then the Mets. And what did the Giants end up doing? Losing 2 of 3 in Miami, winning 2 and 3 of Baltimore, and then losing 2 of 3 against the Mets. So there you go again. I don't know what else these guys can possibly do wrong, but they're coming home to ambivalence at best. And here we are barely into June, and it is going to be a long and painful summer with these guys. And one more time, 2010, 2012, and 2014. All great. Never thought it would happen. Really didn't, because I've said this so often. Started following the team in 62, a year where they lost the World Series in Game 7. It took a scant 27 years for the Giants to get back to a World Series where they took the beat down in 89. And by that time, I was pretty much relegated to the fact they were never going to win anything. So 2002 comes along, and they reinforce that with that terrible, terrible loss in Game 6 and losing the series to the Angels. But what happened in 10, 12, and 14, that's great, it's wonderful, but I realize for Giant fans of recent vintage that don't have the scar tissue of long ago, it is a team now that is incredibly disappointing, getting older, your stars are, and I don't know what they're going to do. They don't have a great farm system at the moment. So what we'll do is write them out and hope for a miracle over the summer, or do what we always do, just pull against the Dodgers, which doesn't do any good until October. Fortunately, works out great when the Dodgers get to October. All right, with that low blow out of the way, let's bring up our great friend Daryl Howerton, HoopMag.com, NBA.com. It is, as always, a basketball Thursday, though I wish, Daryl, it were a more pleasant basketball Thursday, like the Warriors having a 3-0 lead in the NBA Finals, which could have been the case when you and I were talking last week. That isn't what we're looking at now. How you doing, my friend?
10 years ago, we used to have discussions on who to surround Monte Ellis with to turn this into a winner. And now you have different problems.
You know, you're right. The other thing is, I was thinking about this when Jeremy Lin entered the game. It seems like forever ago that I was ranting and raving to you, saying, another Warrior mistake. Remember, they gave up on Native Son, because Jeremy Lin is from Palo Alto. They gave up on Native Son, Jeremy Lin, and now he's in the middle of Linsanity with the Knicks, and he's going to be great, and it's just another indication of the Warriors' ineptitude in the front office. Boy, that seems like a long time ago. And you know what's scary about it, Daryl, when we talk about, you know, the 40-year gap from 75 to 2015, that was a long time. It wasn't that long ago we were talking about Jeremy Lin and the Warriors, right?
Right. Back in the days of Steph Curry, Monte Ellis, and Jarrett Jack.
That's right. The Warriors of, you couldn't get a backcourt situated with Monte Ellis and Steph Curry. So who are you going to deal? Remember that? There's
right,
that
right.
one. There was the, well, you know, let's ship Klay Thompson off to the Timberwolves. There was that one, too, that we had. So long ago and far away, but really not calendar-wise. I just choose to feel as though it was somewhere back in the last century. Not the case. Actually, it's been this decade, for goodness sake. All right. We'll get back to the Warriors if we have time. Watch this dance, okay? We will after the break, but I do want to start, as we always do, with college. And I want to come back to my, you know where I'm headed here, because I'm happy that they're moving that three-point line back. You and I have had this discussion over and over again. But, Daryl, is this a Band-Aid on a bigger problem? And I don't want to be part of the Greg Popovich, you kids get off my lawn routine, right? But there is no question, as much as I love and a proponent of the three-point shot, okay, it has gotten out of hand. It's so farcical to think that they actually moved the damn thing in during one of the Bulls' runs, that first one that the Bulls had, the Portland series. Michael Jordan, you remember, had that big finals game. They had moved the line in because it was so underutilized. That's changed radically. Now it's overused. In college, it's overused. It's taken away some of the beauty of the game. You and I both know the premise. The premise was to go out and defend, and it should open up the middle. That's why they started that 17-9 line, that ridiculous line that actually intersected between the free throw line and the top of the key in the ACC. And it was just really ridiculous. Have you ever seen those things in videotape? But, Daryl, why not just let's just get it over with, as I've said to you. Let's move the line to 25 feet. Both pro and college, a line that will fade out wherever 25 feet is, off in the sides, off probably somewhere off the key. Free throw line extended would not quite be right, but in the key somewhere, wherever the line, like I said, get a tape measure, go to the rim, take the radius of 25 feet, wherever it meets the sideline, you don't have corner threes. Why don't we do it for everybody? I'm not talking about the high schools, but why don't we just do it in college and the pro and get it over with now?
It's something that's bound to happen, and it probably will happen 10, 20 years from now. But as you and I and everybody out there, all your listeners know, the college world, the NCAA, they're the last ones to adapt. So they're going to be the last one to experiment with a rule change. You know, we would see with the NBA, especially with a receptive commissioner like Adam Silver, I could see him one day lean toward that way, but I think it's going to take another pioneer. You know, he might use it through the G League and experiment with that way, like he does with other various rule changes, not to mention the WNBA. You might see it happen there first. But you just inspired me. You made me think while I was listening to your rant. No, no insult intended.
Oh, of course not.
It's a very good rant. And
wait a minute, you meant eloquent. Dissertation, is that what you were saying? Rant?
Rant was an acronym for like some type
an acronym? Yes. Okay, great. Okay. You and I would be married because that's kind of what I hear every day.
What you inspired me to do and what I will do is call someone at the basketball tournament who implemented something called the Elam ending, which is causing people to rethink the way maybe overtime games should end. And they would be the perfect type of experimentation for that. I'm seriously going to make a phone call to them and see, just to pitch it to them and see what they say, because it's going to take that type of experimentation. And people see a 25-foot perimeter three-point line, takes away the corner threes, opens up the post-up game and mid-range game once again. I think it's a great rule that has so many other hidden benefits that we haven't even talked about.
Well, look, you know why I'm so impassioned about this, and that is I am really galled by the corner. The 22-footer is ridiculous, okay? And and we talked about it, Daryl. You have to do a toe dance anyway to stay in bounds. You can't call an NBA game without spending some time talking about a guy who was either called for being out of bounds in the corner before he shot it or was out of bounds but nobody saw it, right? There isn't enough room, and the shot is too short. And it would – and I know we've been down this road before, but it's relevant right now because the NCAA is at least taking that step forward to the international line of just a hair over 22 feet. I would think for the purist, the Greg Popoviches of the world, this would be the kind of thing where he would say, you know what, this is the happy medium we need. if we want to play defense in a way to deny the three out of 25 feet, we're conceding that we are going to open up the mid-range game. But that was supposed to be the whole premise of the three-point line to begin with, Daryl. I mean, that was the whole idea. The whole idea in the ABA wasn't 3 points for two, because you know this because you are a big analytics guy. You really, if you wanted to be fair about the three-point line, and I talked about this a few weeks ago, as far as value, you can't have value to a shot that is 3-2. That ratio is too great in favor of a three-point shot. That's why the Mike D'Antonis of the world have said, I don't want to see mid-range shots. They don't want to see a three or a layup. I don't want anybody shooting mid-range stuff because it may not go in. I'd rather you take it from three. But the reality is, Daryl, unless you want to have a 2.5 shot, that's how much, if you want to leave the line where it is right now, that's how much you'd have to adjust to make it 2.5 versus 2. 3-2, the only reason to do it is to say we want to make sure you go out and stop the three, thereby opening up the mid-range. And it hasn't worked, right? It just has not worked. The guys, they fade to the corners. They go everywhere. Last night, you know, Green and Lowry both made shots right out of their rear ends on shots that they were highly makeable because it was too damn easy. So would the Popoviches of the world then be pleased by this?
I think so. I think all the purists would be pleased, and I think it's something you need to do. And really, the way you got to look at it, God, I'm going to bring God into this. God never intended for a 21-foot shot, a 20-foot shot to be a three-point basket. And the reason I say that, let's say you hired the best.
Do you have confirmation on this? I'm just curious. I just
well,
I think I'm tied
right
in
now, so I'm giving him credit.
Okay, because I'm just saying, I thought I was tied into the league. And all of a sudden, you are definitely tied into a higher authority. So, you know, Adam Silver, I got news for you. Daryl's got you trumped. Go right ahead. I didn't know that was the pipeline you had going. That's damned impressive. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, if you hired the late architect, the late great architect, I.M. Pei, to design a basketball court, or let's go with a living architect, great, Frank Gehry, he would look around and maybe base the three-point line. Let's call it, to make it analytically correct, it might be a 27 or a 28-foot three-point line. It would be all around the court. And once you design it, you'd say, well, we have to eliminate a couple of court row seats on both sides to make it happen. That's where that doesn't happen. And you get the compromise of 20-foot threes, 21-foot three-pointers, 19-foot threes. It's all because they can't eliminate, money-paying customers. So because of that, that's why we have the 21-footer, the 20-foot line, as three-pointers, and it's ridiculous. So if you want to at least make it analytically correct, it really should be a 27-foot, 28-foot three-point line that just hits the perimeter, and that way if you're not going to rearrange all the NBA arenas, then you come up with that compromise. To do it the other way, it creates an analytical imbalance in the league that most of the NBA never took advantage of for decades. It wasn't really until Daryl Morey and Moneyball and all these people started making a mockery of the game that everybody realized, well, we have to adjust too, or else we're going to be the ones. Really, in the last 10 years, it's become ridiculous, and a rule needs to be implemented and changed. And what college basketball did this year, you're right, it's a Band-Aid on the problem. I mean, taking it from 19-9 to 22, 1 3/4 is an improvement, but it's not going to even come close to solving the problem.
Well, look, as they've gradually move this thing back, they're at least headed in the right direction. Incidentally, if you wanted the 28-point line, Steph Curry would be very pleased, okay, because his advantage, he and Damian Lillard would be saying, this is a wonderful idea right now. So we'll see. All I know is that I never thought there would come a time when I would say it's 2-3-point reliant, but when you have guys giving up in the low post, giving up layups to kick, and I'm not talking about toward the end of a game, Daryl, where obviously if you're down and the two isn't going to do any good, you are going to be looking for the inside out in the arc. But I'm talking about guys that are passing up dunks and layups, for goodness sake, to kick to a three-point shooter because they feel as though if the guy's very proficient, he's probably going to make that shot. And like I said, the value is skewed too much. But you know what? They're not going to ask me, and nor should they. I do want to ask you, though, if you think it will tangibly make any difference in the college game the way it's played. Again, if you want to come back to the original premise of trying to get guys to unclutter the lane, is it going to change anything at 22 feet and change anything at all from what we've seen so far?
Nothing at all. What I see every year is the three-point percentage is improving on the college and pro level. I expect that to continue to happen in the NBA. And if anything happens in the college level, maybe the improvement isn't as significant. But I bet you they'll still be shooting the three-point percentages at the same rate they were doing it this year, if not better. You know, just because the kids, the young men, are improving so much year to year. So pushing it back a foot will affect it slightly, but these guys are getting better. I go watch, you know, sixth graders play basketball and see them whip around the pass of three-point lines, and they're draining them. You know, not just every sixth grader, but I'm talking about the elite sixth graders. And when I see that, I'm like, we never played basketball like this. And it's the game has totally changed. And as these young men, young boys develop and come up, you know, these 22-footers, 21-footers are just murder to them. They eat that up like it's a little dessert. So it really needs to be pushed back dramatically soon, or else the problem just, you know, will double and triple and multiply exponentially.
Well, we'll go to 22 feet in an inch plus. That's where we're headed in, 2021, right? I believe that's the case. And we've seen it go from 19.9 in 07 to 20.9. It's actually technically not 0.9. It's 20 and three quarters is what it was in 2008. And then we've kind of sort of left it there. So we'll see. I just know if they want better spacing and all that stuff and they want to change the game for the better, they do need to get it way out there. And, you know, Darryl, we've talked so often, much like Tiger Woods and what happened at Augusta in Tiger's prime at the start of the 2000s, he changed golf the way it was played because, as a matter of fact, they had to change everything at Augusta to try to Tiger-proof it because all the fairway bunkers in particular became irrelevant because he was bombing it right over there from the tee. And that brought up a whole generation of guys who said, you know what, Tiger can hit at 320, I can hit at 320. And I know Tiger got older. I'm talking about before Tiger stopped winning majors in 08, before what happened with the Masters this year. He was not, Darryl, in the top 10 in driver distance, even while he was still winning majors, because of the guys that had come up behind him. Same thing has happened now. Like you said, it started with Morey and D'Antoni and those guys. Steph Curry brought it to a level where, you look at Steph, he said, if you want to say, boy, I'd like to break a backboard the way Shaq or Daryl Dawkins did, you and I both know most people, 99.99999, will never have the physical capabilities to do that, never mind the changes they've made to keep you from destroying the goal. But I'm just saying you're just not physically going to be 7'2 and 300 pounds. You can be 6'3 as Steph Curry is and about 185, and it changed everything. And I think you're right in saying we have got a whole generation that's come up that they're not taken aback by 22 feet. Are you kidding me? Look at what happened. Look at what happened last year, and we've seen it head to the NBA. You had guys that were taking it from 27 and 28 feet. Remember when Jimmer Fredette did that at BYU? And everybody thought it was such a revelation. You tell me how many guys, Darryl, you saw last year in college. Guys that are in the pros now. I can think of one in Atlanta. They're just pulling up for S's and giggles from 30 feet, right? They have no hesitancy to take the shot. So let's get on with it. Let's move it back there and just get into the 21st century. You know, we're only almost 20 years into the damn thing. Sorry. You're right. That was a rant. I'm sorry. Okay.
When you talk about the Fresno State team coming up, I mean, everyone from Noah Blackwell to New Williams, you know, they're taking long threes last year and draining them and being big threats in addition to what Deshaun Taylor and Braxton Huggins were doing in their senior years. You saw people like Aguirre Gao improve month to month in his freshman year, you know, getting used to the college three-point line, and he became adept at it as the season went along, you know, making it a strength as opposed to a weakness in the beginning, improving so much. And then you look at the players coming on to Fresno State next year, like Darrell Edwards and Jordan Campbell. I mean, all of a sudden you have five guards that are, you know, big threats at the line. I'm not even counting the freshmen, you know, like Anthony Holland or Jared Hyder. I mean, there's so many guys who are just three-point threats, but it's even the forwards nowadays. It's the centers. It's, you know, having the guard play is such a big part of it all. And these players are shooting it much better than the 33% rate, which would translate to a 50% two-point shot if you translate the points to percentages. And even nobody shoots 50% from two. So, I mean, we're talking about it's so analytically lopsided that they really have to change it more than 1 foot because otherwise, you know, it's a more of a three-point game than a two-point game nowadays.
Yeah, and yeah, I understand what you're saying about 28 feet. Whatever. If you could get it to 25 with it, like I said, tailing off wherever it happens to hit the sideline, I think you'd be okay. I'll tell you what, we'll hit the break and come back and talk a little bit more NBA and more college. But I was thinking Don Nelson, and with Nelly, you never knew if he was serious or not, right? But he got so fed up of the criticism of the three-point shot, he said, okay, here's what we need to do. We need to have spots on the court where we've got the five-point shot way out there just prior to half court, then the four-point shot, then the three, then the two in mid-range, and then dunks and layups only count one. Okay? Now, again, it's a little rock and jock from my MTV days, but that was, I believe, Nelson trying to point out the trend of the game, and it's just the reality of, like you said, the mathematics. But, Daryl, it is impossible to criticize anybody. I mean, they talked about Villanova making a joke of it when they won the title in 2017. Why would you go any other way if the mathematics tell you, if you're a proficient three-point shooting team, like you said, in every six shots you can be 17% less and still be just as proficient on the scoreboard? I mean, would you ever consider the old 2.5? Would you ever consider that, Daryl? It's just a matter of semantics, isn't it? He's open.
Right,
he hits the 0.5. Couldn't we say that? No? See,
no,
now you're laughing again. I'm serious, and you're laughing at me now. Honestly.
But I do love your 25-foot line. It's the perfect compromise to a day and age where that it's long overdue. And I expect we'll see the WNBA or G League at it first. And I wouldn't be surprised if it happened within a year, because the problem is getting that out of control, out of whack, that it really needs to be implemented fast, and someone smart will make that change.
You're right, because 22 is not going to make any difference. Most of the guys back up a little bit. Anyway, we'll see. Finally, as we hit the break, though, the other rule I want, and this one I think would make a big difference, drop kicks count 10, okay? So so say you're down 10 late, right, like last night, Curry could have crossed half court, done a Jim Thorpe and bounced it one time, just punted it right up in the air. What do you think? No? Okay.
If they bring that back with the, let's give the underhanded free throws 2 points, and I'm with you there.
Well, that's Rick Barry said that'd be a great idea, and so does his son Canyon, wherever he may be these days. Where is Canyon Barry at right now, by the way?
Is he I have no idea.
Overseas, somewhere like that? I don't know. All right.
I'll have that for you next week.
Yeah, we'll look it up during the break, okay? You always know where everybody is. You still have Ron Anderson Sr. playing in France, and he's 62, for goodness sake. Every week I bring that up. All right, we're going to take a break, come back with more Daryl with me until 3 o'clock. Been a tough week basketball-wise, my friend, but we'll get back to it after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. 2:31 here until 3 o'clock. CGO Takeover bringing you to 6. Giants have already played and lost today. It's amazing where you can barely get to the afternoon, and the Giants have already found a way to take an L. They're on their way back home, and probably not going to be any better when they get home, but they are done with the road trip to the East. Only play-by-play tonight over on 790, the A's and the Angels in Anaheim, where the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim play. The A's managed to score at 9 last night and still lose, so we'll see what happens tonight. We're talking to our good friend Daryl Howerton, solving all the ills of the game of basketball. Daryl, before we talk NBA, I am sincere about not the drop kicking, although I think it'd be a hell of an idea. But what I would like to see the league institute, reinstitute, because I used to watch it as I was a kid, and this was the case, having the single free throw taken on the first four fouls of a quarter. And the reason why that would be so intriguing is that if you stayed out of foul trouble in the last 2 minutes, if you had the foul to still give, say you're down by three or whatever, or down by two, since you only would have the bonus mandatorily if it wasn't the fifth foul, and the second foul in the last 2 minutes, it would give you one to use if you were at three or under, where strategically, Daryl, to go ahead and foul and even put a Steph Curry on the line for one. I think it would be great to get that rule back. They gave it up back in the 60s, early 70s. What say you?
Oh, it's a wonderful thing. I mean, it puts so much more strategy into the game. It basically rewards teams for not fouling, for running in a clean game, which causes for games to be much run in a much faster fashion. It brings up so many hidden benefits that I think the benefits to, I mean, the overall, you know, additional great things it brings, it rises exponentially. So not only for the strategic minded out there, but I think even it makes for a more aesthetically pleasing game when you take the needless fouling out.
Well, it would particularly stop a lot of the grabbing somebody on the fast break, which people always complain about. I'm not talking about the clear path foul. You know the one I'm talking about, right? And teams do it all the time, and strategically it makes sense. You look up and there's a 3-on-2 coming your way. You just grab the guy in the middle and stop it. You would be more hesitant to do that if you thought it would take away your ability to have a foul or so to use at your discretion toward the end of a quarter in particular a game. But I would imagine they won't do it because they feel like it slows the game down on those first three fouls or four fouls where you're shooting just one throw during the quarter. Anyway, we'll get away from that stuff and let's talk here about the bigger issue of this NBA Finals, and it's something I talked to CG about. Stephen A. Smith, he is a fine basketball writer. For all his bloviating, he is a fine basketball writer and earned his stripes with the Inquirer and Philly and all of that. So he's not some guy who just showed up and decided to yell at you for a couple hours every day. But he has a tendency to act as though he's got inside information when I think a lot of the times what it is intelligent information, but really only conjecture on his part, not that he's actually heard it from a source. I bring this up when he went on First Take, start of the week from Oakland, because they're there all week, of course, with these games. They'll be there through Friday because that's when game four will play. And he said, hey, you know what? Here's when, I guess, was it Tuesday or Monday or Tuesday, they arrived there at Lake Chalet off of Lake Merritt. He said that he has heard from sources, one, that Kyrie Irving is going to the Nets. May be true. But the other thing is that KD supposedly has said if the Warriors win the title again, he's leaving. But if they lose, he stays. And then they turned to the crowd and said, so what would you rather have, the title or KD? And I think the crowd, as a Warrior crowd, felt like, you know what, bird in hand, we take the title. Okay, do you really believe, independent of the potential that it's right, that Stephen A. really has inside information, or is he just taking a well-founded guess here?
Well, no, I know Stephen A. Smith, as a reporter, is getting his information from somebody. So I don't doubt the fact that what he said is true, that somebody told him from, you know, a high source from within, you know, that was indeed the case. But I also know by talking to these high sources, is that I could talk to these same people and get five different stories from five different high sources. And part of the job of having the First Take type show or some of these shows on ESPN or Fox Sports 1 is having a controversial take that I'll get the most people talking and tweeting, right, you know, and whatever happens. And it has nothing to do with whether, you know, accuracy or what have you. 90% of the time it's the producer's take on things, and the producer doesn't even talk to, you know, agents or coaches or players and or general managers, but yet you're getting the Chiron headline from that person's perspective just because that person's perspective knows what generates the heat. And I think when I hear something like that, I don't take it seriously because I know what these TV shows do. I do know it's the soft drinks, it's the carbonation, it's the, you know, the sugar of the sports world. And I'm not saying what Stephen A. got was inaccurate information. He got that from somebody. I do believe that. But I also don't believe it is the truth of what will happen.
Well, look, I'm not saying that he invented out of midair. My point is that he didn't hear it from Kleiman, the business partner and agent, or Durant, because I don't know that Durant even knows right now. You know, our good friend Chris Haynes is very close to KD, has been ever since Durant got to Oakland, and I haven't talked to Chris lately because he's a little busy with the finals, but we'll get him on. But I would imagine he's going to say, you know what, Kevin, if he has made up his mind, is not intimating that to anybody at the moment. I will say this, Daryl, because it would change everything again going forward. I was definitely a guy who felt as though had the Warriors finished the deal in 2016, and one more time, I've heard so much about Draymond and the suspension, and I've told you over and over again, it wasn't the Draymond suspension in Game 5 that cost the Warriors that series. It was that during that Game 5, Bogut was hurt and out, and that took their rim protector away. And that was a far different Andrew Bogut physically than the guy who's 4 years older and now doesn't have as much tread on the tires. But also Iguodala and Livingston re-injured already existing injuries, and though they played through it, they weren't the same. That's the reason the Warriors weren't strong enough. Give Cleveland all due credit for coming back from 3-1. But I said afterward, had the Warriors won it, there's no way in the world Durant would have come there. He would have been the ultimate coattailer. That would have been the back-to-back NBA champions he was joining and a team that would had just set the record for 73 wins in a season. Some people said no. Then Durant said after he had signed a couple of months later as we headed toward the season, because he signed, as you know, we're actually committed on July 4 of 2016. He said before the season started, had they won, he never would have come here. Okay. I don't know, Daryl, that the converse is true. I don't think there's if the three-peat is there, you could almost make the argument that he's more likely to stay to see how far this string can go than having the streak broken, which frees him up further. Or you can take the Stephen A. stance and say, they need me. I've proven they need me because, and again, he won't play in Game 4. We know that already. I've proven because they couldn't win the title without me. Daryl, both make sense. But do either really govern his decision, in your opinion, or is it more about where he can go and who he can bring with him, that he's still Batman and somebody else is Robin? Is that really what it's about?
I hope not. I mean, I can't pretend to be Kevin Durant and know what's going on in his mind. But to me, there's no better situation than where he's at right now. So that's when I hear people who are closer to Kevin Durant or closer to the NBA scene who are out there covering it on a daily basis that have opinions that he's going to New York or he's definitely leaving Golden State. You know, I can't argue with them because they're tighter to the situation than I am. I just know from my perspective, there is not one single reason to leave. The best team is Golden State. He can stay on the best team. He can make more money in Golden State than anywhere else. He can sign a five-year Supermax contract with 8% initial raise that nobody else can give him. They can sign him for 4 years at a 5% initial raise, which is a much smaller contract. And plus, you know, and there's just no reason to leave whatsoever unless you didn't like the people you were playing with. And if that is the case, then by all means leave. If he wants to live in another city for another reason, by all means leave. But there is no he's not going to be in a better basketball situation no matter where he goes. He's not going to make the same amount of money no matter where he goes. And the team, from all points of view that I see, they really want him to stay, from Steph Curry to the ownership to coaching to general manager. So I don't see why he's leaving or how he's leaving. But then again, smarter people than me are saying he's gone. So what do I know?
It is an intriguing situation, and your points are well taken, and I in large measure agree with you, though I will say this. One of the comments, and you know, you can read into almost any comment, even if it just happened to have been off the cuff, and you could say it was much more thought out or orchestrated than it might have actually been by Durant. But when he said, and it kind of backed up what you were talking about, when he said, look, because when all this stuff came up, the preposterous statement, and I've told you this already, that the Warriors are better without Durant. That's right. They're better without the guy that, in my opinion, is the best player in the world. If not, it's 1A with he and Kawhi, and if LeBron is healthy, it might be a trifecta. But the point is, there is nobody on this planet better at basketball than Kevin Durant right now. He's great to play with. He's unselfish. We've said this, Daryl. He is unguardable. We talk to every expert there is. You cannot guard him. You can just hope he misses, because when he elevates, he can't even see you. You can be a 6'8". You can be Kawhi Leonard. And you can be this great 6'8 defender. And if he catches and elevates, even you can't bother the shot, okay? We all know that. Every player knows it. But when he said, look, my teammates and the Warrior organization, they all know how important I am. It's the people from the outside that are the problem. What I found interesting about that is, from the outside, Daryl, is he talking about the fan bases in other areas? Or is he talking about the fan base in Oakland, where he feels as though he can never be what Steph Curry is? So everybody, including the home base of the Bay Area, despite the Chase Center and all the Silicon Valley opportunities that are at his feet, that he doesn't want to stay if the fans, in his opinion, don't appreciate him for what he is. What do you think he's saying?
I think he's saying he cares what people think about him.
And we know his legacy, yes.
Yes, his legacy is very important to him. And sometimes I think he makes decisions based on that. And if he just went back to focusing on what's best for him, what would make him happiest, I think his mindset to coming to these changes are different. He's not the type of he doesn't have the same mindset of a Steph Curry or a Tim Duncan. When I look at Steph Curry, I see he's the greatest player in basketball. When you talk about Kevin Durant, I see he's the best because Curry lets him be the best. Curry wants him to be the best. Curry, when he recruited him to Golden State, said, we need you here to win championships after championships, and I don't care about all the hype. I want you to be the man. He let him be the finals MVP twice in a row. He wanted him to win those awards. He wanted what was good for the Warriors. That's what makes him the greatest player in basketball, and it's what made Durant the best player in basketball. You look at Duncan, what he did when Tony Parker in 2007, when he saw that he had the point guard matchup in the finals, he wanted him to win the finals MVP. He wanted Kawhi to win the 2014 finals MVP. But anybody who looks at the stats and knows and follows the team closely, they know those were Duncan's teams. They know he's the greatest player. And it's the same thing with Curry. He's the greatest Warrior, but he'll give up the hype. He'll give up the spotlight to make someone better than himself. He'll sacrifice that to make Kevin Durant the best player. And everything that Steph Curry promised KD, everything the Warriors promised him, came true. He got the spotlight. He got the finals MVP. The Warriors became champions. They needed him just as much as he needed them. And I would hate for this breakup to happen because they've been so good for each other.
Well, I'll tell you this. It will be easier to make the case for staying if the hypersensitivity reaches this level again this summer if the team doesn't win. There's no doubt. If they don't win and he doesn't play or he comes back, and again, he will not play in Game 4. That was made clear this afternoon. If it's a case where he comes back and he's limping around, everybody knows he's nowhere near 100%, because Darryl, my point about this, to turn it to the court, is pretty basic. For Kevin Durant or Klay Thompson, it's not as though, or Kevon Looney, they're saying maybe now the shoulder will heal up enough that if he can't, the pain is there. If he doesn't risk re-injury or further injury, he might play, might. But it's not like any of those three guys, Darryl, are on suspension where they're fully healthy, right, just waiting to come back when the league says it's okay because they got upset with the officials or something. That would be one thing. But much like Boogie Cousins, you're talking about if Durant comes back in particular, he has been off the court for a month. He's not going to be 100%. You can't possibly imagine that he's going to be as effective. Now, I guess 75% of Kevin Durant may be as good as anybody in the series, save for Kawhi Leonard. That might be true. But the point is, there's no doubt if the Warriors lose this series, and they are likely to lose it right now the way it's going, it makes it easier for him to stay. But is there some sort of fulfillment issue that none of us can understand about this guy? That he is the guy with the mansion and the accolades and all that stuff that from the outside looking in, we say, I do not know why in the world this guy doesn't wake up every day with a smile on his face a mile wide whistling zippity-doo-dah down the Mission District because his life is great. But he doesn't view it that way. Is there something so complicated about him that this striving for fulfillment is something we cannot understand because to us it looks like he should be fulfilled to the nth degree?
Yeah, I just hope he quits paying attention to the outside voices. And
that's
just
never going to happen, my friend. That obviously is never going to. The social media, he needed to be born in Babe Ruth time if he didn't want to be bothered by social media, you know?
Because unplugging is the only way for him to go, because the people who matter, the people who know better, they understand that he's one of the greatest players ever. And what he's doing right now, it's history in the making. And no one would be happier to see him leave Golden State than the trolls that are trying to get him to leave Golden State. You know, that is that type of scheme. If he goes to New York, the trolls will only follow him there, and they'll be laughing as the Knicks struggle, as the Knicks try to get to 500.
Right.
It's really an uphill battle wherever he goes from that
point on. But that's after the fact, Darryl. Look, your point is right in the middle of the bullseye, and I'm right in lockstep with you. But the problem is this, again, the old parallel universe theory that I proffered to you over the years, right? You can't have a second path going on at the same time. When you get to the fork in the road, if you try to take it, guess what? You hit the center divider. He has to make a decision. If the decision is to go to New York and he finds out 4 months in that the grass wasn't always greener on the other side, it's too darn late, right? Too late at that point. He's locked into a long-term deal there. He can't tell the Warriors, you know what? You guys, this isn't a marriage. You can say, you know what, honey, I was right. I never should have left you. You have left place in perpetuity if you do that, right?
Right. If you're looking at things from a basketball perspective, you're 100% right on. But let me throw this out for all your listeners out there and yourself. Let's say it's not for basketball. Let's say it's because you want to get into NBA ownership one day. And let's say, for instance, one of these good friends of Rich Kleiman of the Knicks, they're saying, hey, we might be selling this team in a couple of years. There are rumors that the Knicks are up for sale right now. And maybe you can buy in as a partner. And if you buy in, you could always sell some of your partnership to KD. And in the long run, he's a Knicks owner. And now nothing would drive up the value more than KD coming to the Knicks right now. Now, if one of these type of under-the-table type deals are going on right now, then that might be the type of thing that's nothing's going to stop him from going to New York. And we won't find out about this till 5 years from now. And then we'll say, oh, that was the reason. Then we'll say, oh, that made sense. So there's always stuff out there that we can't be privy to, that we can't see, that might be a reason for going. But let's take that off the board. And if you take that out of the picture, there is no reason for him to leave Golden State, where he can make more money, have more of the spotlight, and win more games than anywhere else in the NBA.
Yeah, except it's Steph's team, and it's going to be Steph's team forever, and evidently there is an issue about that. Though I will tell you this, since you brought it up. Raymond Lewis, you were familiar with Raymond Lewis, who was a great player, Cal State LA,
yes,
back in the early 70s. Unfortunately, drugs took him down, and he died far too young. He lit up Doug Collins in the 72 Olympic trials, and had Raymond Lewis been on the U.S. Olympic team, they probably would not have lost to the Russians the way they did, because Lewis was the guy who could get his own shot and go for 50. We used to see it at Cellin Arena all the time when the Diablos of Cal State LA came in. But Tark told us a story on air one time in the early 2000s, and he said that Raymond Lewis was supposed to, as was the case with George Gervin, by the way, that Raymond Lewis was supposed to go to Long Beach State, and he said that what Raymond Lewis really wanted was a fire engine red Corvette convertible. And he said, you know, I can't give you that. And he said, a week later, he signs with Cal State LA and magically is driving around South Central with, you guessed it, a fire engine red Corvette. So you're right. There are under-the-table deals, Daryl, that sometimes we find out about right away. Other times we don't find out about it for years. And it might be that Joe Lacob and company and Peter Guber are offering that same under-the-table deal for Kevin Durant to stay in Oakland or stay in San Francisco. We'll see. Okay, last couple of minutes on the court only. Thompson will probably play tomorrow. He wanted to play last night, but the Warriors wisely wouldn't let him. Looney may come back at some point, may come back. And with Durant, once again, it's another day that he's not playing for Friday. Daryl, as much as I want to see the Warriors make this three-peat happen, whether Durant stays or not, I just can't see any way. You know, Nick Nurse said last night, yeah, okay, they've got a few guys out. That was the greatest understatement of all time, okay? That's like saying that in The Wizard of Oz, it was a little windy in Kansas. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit of an understatement. Yeah, they had a few guys out. Yeah, a few of the best players in the world. I don't see how in the world the Warriors, given their health problems, can win this series. And I know what Draymond said, we win there, we win here, but I just don't see it happening. Is that my usual Warrior pessimism, or am I right?
No, you're right. I mean, what I said before the playoffs, or before the finals, was that the Raptors have better players, but the Warriors have chemistry and experience. Now, I said that because Kevin Durant wasn't playing and DeMarcus Cousins wasn't playing. And you take those two people out, and the Raptors do have better players, but they still have the chemistry experience. Now, you take away Klay Thompson and his chemistry experience, he's not playing. You have Iguodala play less minutes because he can't go. Now you have Looney out the picture. I mean, now they no longer have chemistry and experience, because guys with less chemistry are now forced to play 30 minutes a game, and guys who don't have playoff experience are forced to play 25 minutes and guard these Raptors. So they no longer have that big advantage that they once had, as long as these players are sidelined. And even a standstill Durant or a standstill Thompson is not going to get the job done against this very, very talented 7-deep Raptor team, maybe even 8-deep, maybe even 9-deep, because Jeremy Lin can still play basketball. He just isn't playing because they have so much guard talent.
Yeah, he and Pat McCaug will be the decision makers. Look, I'll let you go by telling you this. Jeff Van Gundy said it, the Warriors looked like a G League team as far as the roster that was out on the court last night, and that team that we saw, because Cousins also had hurt his foot, so he's having tremendous problems. He is like 10% of what he will be, but I don't know if it's going to mean he can cash in or not in the summer. Going to take a big chance for a big contract with him. But when Van Gundy said that it's true, the team the Warriors fielded last night in the fourth quarter could not have made the Western Conference playoffs. That's the reality of it. So we'll see. You never say never with these guys, but I don't see it happening, and then we'll see if it impacts Durant or not. Daryl, I appreciate it, my friend, and all I can tell you, and I know this for sure, I had Dave Severns on last week. He can't say it, but the L.A. Clipper front office is pulling like hell. Trust me on this one for the Warriors, because they do not want Kawhi staying in Toronto, and the feeling may be the only reason he will stay is if they win the title. So imagine that, the Clippers pulling for the Warriors. Didn't think you'd hear about that one in the near future, did you?
Not a little Blake Griffin and Chris Paul right there, so that makes sense.
Well, yeah, well, you know what? There's still plenty of animosity to go around. Daryl, appreciate it, my friend. Hope you visit NBA.com, HoopMag.com. I'll talk to you next week, and you and I will head to the parade in Toronto. I'll see you. Bye.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, guys. We'll take a break, wrap it up, send you off to CG on 5,000 Watt 940 ESPN.